It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you caring for an aging loved one? Are you a senior searching for answers? Welcome to Senior Care Live, a program dedicated to you. Providing information, education, and resources for seniors and their caregivers. And now, America's Senior Care Consultant, Steve Kuecker.
Hello, and welcome to Senior Care Live. I'm Steve Kuecker, your Senior Care Consultant, and I really appreciate you tuning in today. We have a wonderful program on tap with my friend and special guest in studio, Mr. Bruce Glenn. He's the owner and CIO of the Glenn Team. And Bruce, welcome back to Senior Care Live.
Thanks, Steve. Always fun.
All right. And so, Bruce, we always talk about, you know, financial information. You're a fiduciary, a financial advisor. You work with individuals. You work with a lot of plans for, you know, small and medium-sized businesses, healthcare institutions, educational institutions. I mean, you're working with people locally and all around the country. And so I've been wanting to ask you this question because it's a real hot topic. The Fed did not lower the interest rates like was widely expected. And so I think that threw a lot of people for a loop or kind of surprised some folks. So what's that all about?
Well, so the Fed is very closely tuned into what the inflation rate's doing. And so they're monitoring that. And I've never been in the camp that said that they were going to cut rates six times this year or this spring or whatever the case might be. I think I've even said this on the show previous times that Chairman Powell had always said that he felt like previous committees, Federal Reserve committees, had lowered rates back down all too quickly.
Too soon.
After they had raised rates, and then, you know, inflation got back out of control or whatever they were trying to improve wasn't sustainable enough.
Yeah.
So the bottom line was the last inflation, and inflation is measured a lot of different ways. But the core inflation last time, it didn't do what they wanted it to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it just makes the market think that they're less apt to lower rates in June or this summer.
Okay.
So now they're saying, well, maybe more apt to lower rates later this summer or in the fall. But at the end of the day, you really can't, you know, your crystal ball isn't clear enough to say when the Fed's going to lower rates. It really is contingent upon what is inflation doing.
Yep.
And we don't know until we get the numbers in. And a lot of times those numbers get readjusted, restated a month later. So, the first blush numbers are usually not exactly right anyway.
Yep. And so you had all these folks. And so I guess they expected maybe two or three, maybe small rate decreases because they expected the inflation number to be different. But it was different than what they expected. And so it just held tight.
Right. And I think I may have said a hike. But yes, they were expecting, originally they were saying six rate reductions this year.
Oh, six of them. Okay.
Yeah. But that was last September when they paused.
Okay.
And then they've, you know, refined it out to where maybe two or three. So we'll see.
All right. So if this is catching your attention, you're like, wait a minute. This is really interesting information, and I'd like to reach out to Bruce to learn more information about this, maybe your own finances, maybe your company plans, et cetera. Here's the phone number. Write it down, 913-563-7327. That's a Kansas City-based phone number, but you can call from anywhere in the country. And Bruce and his team, like I said, they have clients all over the entire country, 913-563-7327. And Bruce, what are some common ratings that are available in the wide world of investments?
Right. So in the do-it-yourself world where people want to try and pick their own investments, which, you know, some people can do a fairly good job with that, there's a lot of different rating agencies you can use, including ValueLine. We use a system called Aladdin. We use another fiduciary tool called FI360. Those last two are more of a heavy subscription cost. And then, of course, you can read your prospectus on your different investments. What we use more often than not or it's actually one of a package of four different systems we use, is Morningstar, which we have a very expensive version of it. But let's talk about Morningstar today.
Okay.
Because most people can go online and they can get a high-level overview of their investments through Morningstar. So we'll kind of talk about Morningstar a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, but what they do is they'll evaluate how mutual funds are performing, historically speaking, how ETFs, which are known as exchange-traded funds or ETFs, how they perform. You can also get analytics on index funds or individual stocks. But Morningstar is what most people, if they want to, they can go out and Google it and kind of check that out.
Okay. All right. And is that high-level version of just for the consumer level, is there a charge for that or a cost for that, or can they just go on and use that tool?
Yeah, anybody can go out and Google up Morningstar on XYZ stock or whatever the case is. You're going to get some analytic out there on Google or Bing or whatever your search engine is going to be.
And with your, like you said, you have a high-level subscription, so yours provides you, now you're a professional, you're an expert,
right.
It'll provide you a ton more information, but for the average consumer, they can just go out and take a look at it and get some high-level information at no extra charge, I guess.
Right. And those mutual funds and ETFs, for example, they'll typically rate those investments on a 1-to-5 ratio, 5 being the best.
Mm-hmm.
And normally, they're not going to get a Morningstar rating until they've been in business for at least 3 years. Now, stocks are kind of a little bit different. They'll get a 1-to-5 ratio also. But on stock valuations, it's typically based on what they're currently trading at compared to what Morningstar thinks the fair value is.
Ah.
So if you've got a stock that's trading at $100 a share, but they think fair value is $150, meaning that they think it's got room to grow,
that may
be a 4 or 5
You're going to get a high rating
stock
on that.
Right. And then they'll have also what I like to see is what their profitability forecast is, if it's A, B, C, D, or F, their growth forecast, and then their financials are really important. So you can get some of these other dynamics and what the book to, you know, the earnings per share forecast is, or dividends book, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So a lot of good stuff out there.
Excellent. So we're just going to go through some of the terminology today. What is an expense ratio?
Yeah, so an expense ratio is really more prevalent when you're talking about an exchange traded fund or a stock, a mutual fund, whether it be stocks or bonds, or an index fund of some sort. But that's the cost that it takes that company to run that company, right? And it'll normally break that down between what the management expenses are. And if you're like, as a fiduciary, we're only using institutional level funds. So there are no commissions on the funds we're using.
Yeah.
There's no 12B1 fees, which are actually a kickback. So this is something that listeners at home might want to look at when they look at their investments is, what the expense ratios are and are if they have commissions or not. And sometimes you can have a fund that doesn't have a front commission or a front load, but there may be a really heavy ongoing expense. And there could be a 12B1 built in there. And that's a fee that the mutual fund or ETF can – really, it's more about a mutual fund, but they can build that into it and then kick that back to the broker-dealer, which goes to the advisor. And so that's not a fiduciary level of investing because it's kind of a hidden fee, if you will. So you might want to find out about that. And if you're not sure how to find that out, let me know.
Well, and all those fees are eating into your return.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And some fees are reasonable, and it just depends on what you're trying to get. I mean, it's not always about the lowest cost fee.
Yeah.
It's about the best, you know, risk adjusted and net fee or net return you're going to get.
It's about the fit and what are your goals and what are you trying to accomplish, and there's more to it than that, but it is an important part. And I don't know about you, my friends in the listening audience, but I always gravitate toward the broker that can represent all of my options rather than a captive situation where we have fees and commissions. And there's nothing against fees and commissions and all that kind of stuff, but I think it's in my best interest to work in this case with a fiduciary, just like you, Bruce, where you work in the client's best interest, and you're not. It's a completely different model.
Right. So we are independent. We're objective. We don't get any kickbacks from any investments we use. Everything that we get paid is based on the money that we actually manage. It's on the statement, and you see what it is. So it is important. You don't want people that are captive that only have certain product that they're told to sell.
Yep.
You know, you want somebody who's looking out for your best interest.
Yep, and that is a fiduciary. If that's resonating with you, I would recommend reaching out to Bruce Glenn. He's the owner and chief investment officer of the Glenn Team, 913-563-7327. And Bruce, how can you determine the number of stocks, or maybe stocks and bonds, that a fund would have?
Right. So in a prospectus, it'll basically give you that. But again, if you're looking at Morningstar through Google or whatever your search engine is, that's it'll be listed. You have to kind of look, hunt for it. But it's important because you don't necessarily want to have a fund that only has, you know, 20 stocks in it. Because if one of them has a problem, that's a major impact on the overall fund.
That's a 5% impact, potentially.
Yeah, depending on how much money they have in each particular one. But you also sometimes may not want to have one that has thousands of stocks in it either, because you know, that's just kind of following a basic index, and you're not going to get a lot of tactical movement, and you're going to have the good, the bad, and the ugly. You kind of want the ones that are convicted to good quality stocks to try to avoid the bad ones.
So I have so many questions. So I'm wanting to ask you about categories and common categories within investments, and I would like to maybe talk to you about that here in just a second. So again, if you'd like to reach out to Bruce Glenn, he's the owner and chief investment officer with the Glenn Team right here in Kansas City, but they service clients all around the country. 913-563-7327. And now the Senior Care Live question of the week. A turnover ratio is the number of employees retained at an investment company. Is that statement true or false? I don't know. What do you think?
You're listening to Senior Care Live on the Senior Care Broadcasting Network. For more information, visit SeniorCareLive.com. We'll have more with Steve coming up next.
Welcome back. You're listening to Senior Care Live on the Senior Care Broadcasting Network. For more information, go to SeniorCareLive.com. All right, back to the Senior Care Live question of the week. A turnover ratio is the number of employees retained at an investment company. Is that statement true or false? And the answer is false. The answer is false. And Bruce, we're talking about investments. The turnover ratio has nothing to do with employees.
Right. Yeah. We thought we'd have a little fun today and throw a little curveball at the crowd. It is baseball season.
Yeah.
And our Royals are actually doing fairly good so far. But anyway, turnover ratio is actually the annualized pace that they're turning their investments over inside of their fund. And that could be good or bad. It just kind of depends. If they're more tactical, they may change funds out a little more often. If they're just an index tracking program, then they're just going to, if something in the S&P 500, then it's in the S&P 500. And if it's number 499 goes to number 502, it's going to be dropped out. And so that'll be like less turnover. So it just kind of depends on what the strategy is. Is it tactical or is it more passive investments typically?
Okay. If this is resonating with you and you're like, wait a minute, I have some questions for Bruce, reach out to Bruce Glenn at 913-563-7327. And Bruce, we mentioned it in the last segment. What are some common categories of investments? I would think this is really important. And then in this day and age of being aware of, I want to invest in a fund that supports a lot of like green energy, or I don't want to. I want to support traditional, petroleum and fossil fuel or whatever you want. I want to invest in companies, but I don't want to invest in something that has to do with alcohol or tobacco production or whatever the case is. So the categories within these funds, I think, would be a pretty important talking point.
Right. So there are, broad sector categories like large cap growth. Those are typically larger companies that don't pay a dividend. More of your tech companies tend to fall in that category, the big ones. Large cap value is more of a company that does pay dividend, more like a Pepsi or a Coke or Procter & Gamble, those type companies are larger companies that pay a dividend. Then you've got your mediums, both large, growth and value, and your small caps. Then you have your internationals, and they're large internationals. You're developing your frontiers. And then you have your bond categories, from quality governments to your corporates to your higher yielding bond funds. Your multi-sectors have a little more flexibility.
And those are probably a little more conservative in the bond area?
Bonds tend to be a little more conservative. You can take on some additional risk with the higher yielding bonds, and you got to be careful about that too. And then what you're talking about a minute ago is, sector specifics.
Yeah.
and then sometimes very specific strategies. And then when you're trying to carve off certain types of stocks or companies you want to avoid, we might even use more of an SMA type of a strategy. So there's a lot of different ways to do it. We typically will want to make sure we cover all the allocation or all the core, like a baseball team. We want all the core positions covered.
Yeah.
And then we're going to have a couple of specialists out there. Maybe we got an IT fund or a property and casualty insurance fund, things like that. And then maybe we have a strategy that's just buying the top yielding, you know, stocks that raise dividends for 10 years in a row or more, things like that. So, mm-hmm. you know, different things like that. One thing I always want to caution people about is do not chase returns from last year. If you're trying to drive your investment portfolio by last year's return, that usually will blow up on you because very rarely does the leader from last year lead again. And okay. sometimes the loser last year will win this year. So you really want to have a good, you know, good quality, but you want diversified across all the different positions. You know, you don't want to shift your baseball team all the way to the right side because that batter may hit it to the left side.
Yeah, yeah.
But you want good quality players in each position.
Oh, that's a really good analogy. And again, go Royals.
Go Royals. Here you go. So far, so good.
It's looking a little better than the past few years, so that's encouraging. So, so where do you find the quality of bonds?
Yeah, so the bond quality, again, if you're looking on a Morningstar report, you know, what you're looking for are ratings. And so AAA is the highest rated you can get. That's typically going to be your government or government agencies. And then you've got your AA's and your single A's and your BBB. Typically, an investment-grade bond considered to be relatively safe is going to be a BBB or above, so we call it investment grade. And you get below the BBB, you start to lose some quality, but you typically will offset that by having a little bit better yield or interest payment.
A little
component.
More risk-reward kind of a situation.
Yeah, ironically, there's something called NR, non-rated. And so a lot of times a lot of advisors in our industry are fearful of non-rateds. But, a really big fund company that specializes in bonds may have a non-rated bond fund because they may have bought the entire issue from the state of Missouri or whatever the case was. And they're comfortable with it. Their own internal risk analysis said, hey, this is a good quality bond. We're buying the entire issue. And that issuer didn't have to get it rated and take it out to market because they had an embedded buyer right there.
Okay.
So non-rated doesn't necessarily mean poor quality. It could be great quality.
Yeah. Okay. And your average person is not going to know that. So
right. Yeah.
This is why you call Bruce at 913-563-7327. So, okay. And so at what price are bonds owned? And then where do you find that information on a statement?
Yeah, right. Thanks, Steve. So, you know, on the Morningstar report, it'll give you an idea of what the average weighted price is on their bonds. And so before the Federal Reserve started raising rates 2 years ago, a lot of bonds were owned inside of bond funds at over par, par being like $100 per 100, meaning that when it matures, you get your full $100 back. Mm-hmm. If you're going to sell it today, you still get your $100. A couple of years ago, before the Fed started raising rates, a lot of the bonds were valued at more than par. I mean, if you sold them early, you might get $105, $110 per 100 or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And on the statement, it has to show the current price if you sold the bonds early.
Mm-hmm.
And that confuses people. So like the last 2 years when the Fed did raise rates, it actually hurt the tradable value of the bonds from what they were the day before the Fed raised rates.
Mm.
So on your statement, it looked like you lost money. You didn't lose anything because the bonds are still going to mature at full value.
Yeah.
They're only restating the value if you sold them early.
Okay.
But on a Morningstar report, like on your bond fund, it'll say what the average price per bond inside that portfolio is.
Okay. All right. That's absolutely fascinating. What is a coupon or yield on stocks and bonds?
Right. So that's the amount of income they're paying, similar to a CD or an insurance fixed annuity or a bond fund. They're saying that if you loan this money to us, say $5,000 or whatever the case is, in a certain date in the future, maybe May of 2030, we're going to give you your $5,000 back. And in the meantime, we're going to give you a percent of income.
Okay.
Now, bonds will typically pay monthly. And so, right now, a good bond might be paying, depending on the quality, might be paying 5% interest.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you get 5% interest with relatively lower risk and you get your full principal back in the future, then that's good. But the interest payment is the yield. And that's really important because, like the last couple of years where the tradable value was down. But your bonds were paying a set interest payment per share, but it's reinvesting and compounding at whatever the current price is on that bond. Well, if the price is lower, you're getting more shares or fractions of shares bought while that bond is on sale or that bond fund is on sale. And so that is compounding for you. And now that the Fed has quit raising rates, we're starting to see that percolate and become, you know, stronger. And if the Fed starts lowering rates, now that price value of that portfolio is increasing. It's going to be the exact opposite of what we saw the last couple of years.
That is amazing. That's also complicated. And that's why you reach out to Bruce Glenn at 913-563-7327. If you have questions about your own portfolio, maybe you want a second look, a second opinion, I would strongly encourage you, reach out to Bruce Glenn. He is the best. 913-563-7327. And Bruce, thanks so much for being here today. Really interesting information. It's fantastic. Really important information. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. Good to see you.
All right, we'll have more coming up next.
You're listening to Senior Care Live on the Senior Care Broadcasting Network. Have a question? Visit SeniorCareLive.com. Stick around. We'll have more with Steve coming up next.
Welcome back. You're listening to Senior Care Live on the Senior Care Broadcasting Network. For podcasts of the program, go to SeniorCareLive.com or wherever you get your podcasts. So before I continue, I just want to say that the Senior Care Broadcasting Network is alive and well with our partnership with Radio America, and we have added some new stations to our network. So we'd like to welcome and introduce KELY AM and FM in Ely, Nevada. And we're going to be on a really early Saturday morning, and then they're going to rebroadcast this program 11 a.m. to noon. And that I just found out about this, but that actually started last weekend, so last Saturday. So sorry I didn't mention something last week. I didn't know about it until a couple days ago. So, want to thank KELYAM and FM in Ely, Nevada for adding Senior Care Live to your lineup. Thank you so very much. And then would also like to mention that starting this weekend, we are on KFJB AM and FM in Marshalltown, Iowa. And we're going to be on Sunday mornings early from 7 to 8, and that starts the 28th. So welcome KFJB AM and FM, and thanks so much for carrying and broadcasting the program Senior Care Live. And for all of the stations, welcome to the Senior Care Broadcasting Network, and welcome to the family. I really appreciate you. All right, so last week I talked about Medicaid, and I talked about, you know, what it pays for, what it is, how you qualify for it, and that sort of thing. And frankly, I ran out of time. I wanted to expand that a little bit. So last week, just as a very quick review, Medicaid is a federal pool of money that is distributed through the states. So each state has its own bucket of money, if you will, and each state can have some minor differences from that. It's not the same rules for all states. Okay, so there could be, they're very similar though. Okay, but there could be some differences state to state that could be detrimental to your situation or could be very much advantageous to your situation. So it's important to contact and work with an elder law attorney, and that elder law attorney can guide you through this process. Again, I mentioned last week, best money you'll ever spend right there. It's worth it 100%. And you want to do this stuff right. You don't want to mess it up. And you want to have this whole situation maximized for your unique situation. So within that pool of money flowing from the federal level into the state and then distributed to folks who qualify, okay, it'll pay for a lot of things, but my focus for this show is just to talk about how Medicaid will pay for long-term care, okay, and which a lot of folks, they might call it skilled nursing, the health center, a nursing home, that sort of thing. It's the medical model. It's the highest level of senior care that you could receive in a community. So what they do for a single person, super quick, and then I want to move on to a married couple because that's the part I didn't get to. I just wanted to provide just a quick overview here. You have to look at your assets and divide your assets into two different categories. So one is an exempt asset category, and then one is a countable asset category. And I had mentioned that your house is exempt for now, a car, prepaid funeral plan, small amount of life of cash value in a life insurance plan, and then all the stuff in your house. And then your countable assets, and there are exceptions for this depending on the state. I'm just talking in generalities here. Your countable assets, just about everything else, just think liquid assets. Okay, checking, savings, money market, mutual funds, CDs, all of those sort of things. And if you add all of those things up, that would be considered what's a countable asset. So then you take your exempt assets are exempt. So you take your countable assets. And let's say you have, it could be $5, it could be $50,000, it could be $150,000, whatever the number is. And then you would spend that down. So if you've ever looked into this, a very common term, spend down, that's what we're talking about. You have assets and you're spending down to that Medicaid qualification or that trigger. So, for example, you know, I live in Kansas. And so the Kansas number, once you spend down your assets to $2,000, boom, you're in. That's it. That is the number. Other states are could be different than that, but they're all really low like that. You're almost out of money. But the whole point of Medicaid is it's that safety net that says if you should outlive your assets, then the Medicaid program is there to pay the majority of the cost for your stay. And that's all I'm focusing on right now for your stay in long-term care. And that we're talking about, you know, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 a month. Okay, so they pay a lot of money towards this stuff. What happens when you have a couple? So I talked about last week and just now, just a super quick review of a single person spending down, a widow, a widower, or just a single person. Okay, so you have one spouse. And they are, and I hate the term, but they are considered by Medicaid the institutionalized spouse or the spouse needing the care at that nursing home level, the long-term care level. But then you have the other spouse, and that spouse is still doing well. They're still independent. They're still able to live on their own, in their house, in the community. And so many years ago, when you had that situation, this real common situation, you have a couple and one needs care and the other one doesn't, you had people who were spending literally everything they had to qualify for some assistance. And then the one person moved into the nursing home, but then the other person, they're literally broke because they spent all their money they've spent all their money, and then when they're out of money, they have the assistance. But how is the community spouse who is still independent, how are they supposed to live? Because now they have nothing left. So it was pretty common for couples to get a divorce. This is a long time ago. So that, well, if we get a divorce, I mean, at least I'll have half of our assets. And then Congress said, wait a minute. This is the United States of America. That is horrible that some people feel like they have to get a divorce just to protect some of the assets. We should just be able to do that on paper without a divorce. That's crazy. So then they came up with this division of assets, and that's exactly what it is. You're dividing your assets on paper. Part of the assets on his side, part of the assets on her side. And so let's say, for an example, if the husband... Let's say the couple has $200,000 in the countable assets, liquid assets. So you put $100 on his side, $100 on her side. She's going to at least have some money to continue living independently. Then on his side, he's going to spend down his half, quote unquote, down to those triggers. And again, like in Kansas, you spend it down to $2,000. And then Medicaid's going to come in and pay the bulk of that cost. So that is basically how that works. Now, there's a whole lot more to that. A quality and knowledgeable elder law attorney isn't going to just divide this by two. They're going to look at this, and their goal is to maximize the assets that are available for the community spouse. and there are some ways to do this. Okay, and then they're going to try to minimize, and all of this is legal, you just have to know how to do it and do it properly. And then they're going to try to minimize the assets on the side of the ledger of the spouse needing to move to the nursing home and pay for the expensive care. So they're going to try to do that. And so it's usually a lot better than a 50-50 split. Usually the community spouse is able to keep a lot more than 50% if you work with a quality, experienced, qualified elder law attorney. And I mentioned last week, if you want to find a list of elder law attorneys, go to NAELA.org, NAELA.org. That stands for the National Academy of Elder Law Attorneys. You can do a search and you can find one, you know, near your zip code and go out 5 or 10 or 20 miles and get a list and then start calling some of these folks and find out, you know, how they operate. Do they offer a free consultation? What are their rates, et cetera, so that you can find an elder law attorney that you are comfortable with, that you would like to engage their services to try to maximize your financial situation. And the good news is, I'll be having an awesome elder law attorney on this program, and he will explain much better than I can explain how this works. I can't wait to have him on. He's awesome. He's going to be on with me here in about the next 3 weeks or so. And so you won't want to miss that. Anyway, I have so much more for you coming up next.
You're listening to Senior Care Live on the Senior Care Broadcasting Network. To contact Steve or a guest on his show, visit SeniorCareLive.com. We'll have more coming up.
Welcome back. You're listening to Senior Care Live on the Senior Care Broadcasting Network. Have a question? Visit SeniorCareLive.com. All right, just to put a bow on the whole Medicaid thing, I mean, I've just barely scratched the surface. There are lots of ifs and thens. So let me give you just a really, really quick one. And then, I'm going to defer to an awesome elder law attorney here in a few weeks. I want to ask him a lot of these questions, and he can explain it much better than I can. But let me say that here's one of those state-specific examples. So in Kansas, when you look at those liquid assets, there's a huge opportunity here. In Kansas, for the community spouse, so the spouse who's going to stay home, still lives independently, still need to pay their bills, and et cetera, their IRAs and 401ks, their investment and retirement accounts, so IRAs and 401ks are typically what we're talking about. The IRAs and 401ks for the community spouse is considered an exempt asset. Okay, they fall into the category of exempt assets. So let's say you had $200,000 between the couple and $180,000 is in the community spouse's 401k. Well, now you only have to split in the middle, right? Divide in half, $20,000. $10,000 on his side, $10,000 on her side, and boom, you're almost qualified right away. If you did that in the state of Missouri, the IRAs and 401ks of the community spouse, they are considered a countable asset. And you would have to split, you'd have to divide that full amount of the assets half and half. Now, there are still ways that you can work with that to try to maximize the community spouse's assets, but what I've done with many, many, many clients, since I'm in Kansas City and we're on a state line here, I've worked with a lot of couples living in Missouri. I had one lady say, Steve, I'm no spring chicken, but if I can not have to count my $350,000 401k that I worked a really long time to build, if I don't have to count that and we just have to divide what's left, which is small, I'll drive to Kansas all day, every day. I'll drive over the state line to do that. And that's what we did. So in Missouri, if you should choose a Kansas-based long-term care community, Even though you live in Missouri, you have property in Missouri, the Kansas rules apply. And that's one way to work out that situation that could make a huge, huge difference for your family, for my clients. We do it all the time. And it's just an opportunity to use the rules to your advantage. That's what it is. Okay, let me shift gears again. And I want to talk about waiting lists. I usually talk about waiting lists quite a bit in the wintertime, because that's when the peak demand is. I would say about the second week of January, you know, through about the middle of March, and then it starts to kind of taper off. And then the lowest part of the demand cycle would be during the peak summer months, June, July, and August, and then it starts to increase toward the end of the year. And then, boom, it pops up again, January, February, into March, and it starts to taper down. Does that every year. Well, this year I'm seeing something a little bit different, and it's pretty interesting. It's getting very tight in the market out there, when, especially if you're wanting to move into literally your top options, the best places. And so the best places are the best places. And guess what? Everyone wants to move into the best place, right? And they have waiting lists. And the difference this year that I'm seeing, and like I said, this is a pretty interesting phenomenon. I just haven't really seen this much. And again, typically your peak demand, January, February, you see some waiting lists. The waiting list could be kind of long, and then it starts to taper off into March. And here we are towards the end of April. It should definitely be starting to drop off, and I'm not seeing any drop off. So that peak demand from January and February is just as solid through all of March and now through all of April. I don't see it dropping off yet. So I'm going to monitor this very, very closely. I'm told by some of these places that, you know, their waiting list that they thought would be, you know, 60 or 90 days, they're still full, and it could be another 4 to 6 months on top of that. If that happens, and if I see this happening universally in other parts of the country, et cetera, then we have a major issue. I think part of that is, again, the best places are the best places. So you may have to move into a place that is maybe number two on your list, waiting for a spot to open in your number one choice. That would be a two-step move. You want to try to avoid that if you can. It's not convenient, but it will get the job done. The other really, really smart way to approach this is to be proactive. If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you're probably tired of me preaching proactive, proactive, proactive. But this is why. So I had a very nice call in conversation with just a wonderful lady earlier this week. And she said, "Steve, I listened to your program, and I agree with being proactive. I do want the best place, and I do have the time to wait it out." So she wants to move maybe within the next year or so. And so I think that gives us plenty of time to consider our top options through. Again, this is with my firm, Senior Care Consulting, but to go out, look at our, check out our top options, get our name on one or two waiting lists. And then she has the luxury, the absolute luxury, of waiting out a waiting list that might be 4 or 5 or 6 months or 9 or 10 months or even 12 months long, because she's adamant, "I want the best place." And so she's being smart. She will have her choice of the best places available. Now, if you need to move sooner than that, if you need to move in the next 2 or 3 months and you want help from Senior Care Consulting, we need to jump on this right now. Right now. And then we'll have a conversation and we can help you, first of all, determine the right fit and then find the best place available in the entire marketplace. And if you say, "I don't want to move two times, just find me the best place available, and that's going to work for us," that's great. If you say, "Steve, I want the best place available, and then we're either going to stay home and bring in home care for that bridge, kind of build a bridge there to have care at home and then move when the space is available, or we'll move to a community and then we're willing to move one more time to our preferred place. So if you need help with determining exactly what you need, how are you going to pay for it, when do you need to move, and then finding the best options available, I would invite you to reach out for a free consultation with my firm, Senior Care Consulting, at 913-945-2800. Or you could always visit online at seniorcareconsulting.com. We can make this whole process very, very simple for you. Give me a call. We'll talk about it. All right. I'm Steve Kuecker, and I wish you grace and peace. May God bless you and your family on this day and always. Join me next week right here on Senior Care Live.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.